Okay, but here's what I don't get. When did making something by hand become an act of defiance?
That's a really interesting way to put it. I think it's because we live in a world where speed and efficiency are everything, right? So when an artist deliberately chooses the absolute hardest, most time-consuming way to create something, it almost feels like they're making a statement. It's a kind of stubborn insistence on process. This week, we're looking at issue number 75 of the Intersect newsletter, and it's full of artists doing just that. We're talking about Manabu Kasaka building perfect paper replicas of vintage cameras where the film advance lever actually moves. Ayo Hasegawa stacking wrenches into furniture you can take apart and use as actual tools. And Issey Miyake's studio turning fashion waste into chairs.
So we're really looking at that tension then. Artists who could use any material, any technique, but they choose the hardest possible path.
Exactly. And we'll start with Kasaka because his paper cameras most directly embody that question, an artist choosing the absolute hardest route to a thing that already exists in easier forms.
So picture this, a Pentax K1000 camera, but it's made entirely of paper, and the film advance lever, it actually moves.
Right? Manabu Kasaka does this incredible work. He creates these hyper-realistic paper sculptures of all sorts of vintage tech. It's not just cameras. He also does old radios, game consoles, every single button, every tiny dial, every bit of texture. It's all recreated from just paper by painstaking handwork.
It's really something. It reminds me, Jürgen, the curator, actually mentioned someone else recently who was crocheting large-scale versions of 80s flip phones and Game Boys. What is it with artists constantly returning to these obsolete technologies, especially through such intensely labor-intensive methods?
That's a great observation. Part of it feels like nostalgia, doesn't it? A sort of longing for a time when technology felt more tangible, less abstract, maybe even a bit more knowable. These objects were often simpler, designed to be repaired.
I get the nostalgia angle, but I wonder if it's more than that. Could it be a way to prove that human hands can still do what machines or even digital fabrication can't quite replicate in terms of sheer dedication? It's almost like a quiet statement about skill.
That's a compelling thought, that it's about a testament to human dexterity. And what about the choice of paper itself? Is it the fragility that draws them to it, highlighting the delicate nature of memory or technology? Or is it the accessibility of the material, making high art from the mundane? Or is it just the sheer difficulty of making something so precise, so detailed, with something so, well, humble?
I think the fragility definitely plays a part. It makes you almost precious with the object, aware of its constructed nature, its impermanence even. But then, the idea of turning something so common, like a sheet of paper, into something so intricately detailed and functional, that's where the difficulty really shines through for me. It makes you appreciate the process.
It totally flips your expectations of what paper can be. Speaking of artists who choose the hard way on purpose.
You know what I appreciate about The Intersect? It's not trying to sell you on every new tech trend. It's actually asking the hard questions about what we gain and lose.
Yeah, that's what I love about it, too. It finds these stories that genuinely make you think differently, not just about art or tech, but about why we make things at all.
Exactly. So if these kinds of thought-provoking articles matter to you, make sure to subscribe to the newsletter at theintersect.art. You'll get weekly curated stories that really do make you pause.
Okay, back to artists making things the hard way.
This one hits me differently. Designers Lucy Thomas and Thibaut Zimmerman, they go by Zim and Zoo, they're reconstructing boomboxes from hand-cut colored paper.
Right? It's wild to think about. Every speaker grid, every single cassette reel, all of it built through layers, cuts, and folds by hand. No digital fabrication, no shortcuts, just colored paper and patience. It's a completely different kind of making.
And Jürgen, the curator, he really picked up on that juxtaposition, didn't he? Using these ancient techniques to recreate technology that's, well, dead. It's like a conversation between two different eras.
He absolutely loves that anachronistic element. It's not just about replicating an object, it's about the tension created by how it's replicated. It makes you wonder, is this preservation or something else entirely?
It doesn't feel precious or nostalgic in the usual way to me. It reads more like mild defiance, like they're saying, we can make this by hand with such simple materials just because we can.
I completely agree. Maybe it's about slowing down, a kind of process as protest. Choosing paper for a boombox, something that obviously can't play music, is almost absurd. But perhaps that's the whole point. It forces you to look at the object differently, to think about the labor involved rather than its function.
Totally. It's not about functionality, it's about the act of making itself. It's almost like a monument to human effort in a world that's constantly pushing for faster, easier, more automated ways of doing things.
Exactly. It really zeroes in on that idea we started with, choosing the hard way on purpose.
And then there's this next piece that takes waste and turns it into something that might break your heart a little. So we go from paper tech to plastic coral. And honestly, I'm not sure which one makes me think harder about what we're doing to the planet.
It's true. Rashira's work is incredibly impactful. They're an artist collective that takes discarded plastic and through melting and casting techniques, they transform it into these organic, coral-like forms and maritime-inspired accessories.
And it's not just making pretty objects, is it? I remember Jürgen, our curator, has a connection with Sugar Press Arts, an organization that focuses on recyclable and environmentally friendly printing techniques. It just seems like so many artists are using waste itself as both their material and their message now. It's not just a trend for Earth Week, it's a constant practice.
It really is. The way Rashira manipulates the plastic, reshaping its structure through heat and pressure, it turns something that felt like a permanent blight into something that looks natural, even delicate. It's a statement about what's possible, even with the most persistent waste.
But is it hopeful, though? Like, they create these genuinely beautiful things, but my mind just keeps circling back to why we have so much plastic waste to begin with. The sheer volume of it.
That's the exact tension, isn't it? You get these beautiful objects, but you can't help but remember their ugly origins. It's a transformation, yes, but the memory of the plastic's original life, the damage it represents, is still there. It forces you to consider both the artistry and the environmental reality.
Yeah, it really does make you think.
But wait, because this next one, wrenches as furniture, this is where things get really interesting.
Okay, serious question. Would you sit on a chair made of wrenches?
You know, when I first saw Iyo Hasegawa's work, that's exactly what I thought. This Japanese artist, she's making furniture like chairs and tables just from threaded rods and then these stacks of offset wrenches.
No glue, no welding?
None. It's just washers, spacers, and nuts holding the whole thing together. And the wrenches can even twist freely. You can fold the entire piece flat for storage, which is kind of wild for something made of, well, wrenches.
That's really something. But then Jürgen had this great point about it, didn't he?
He did. His take was almost subversive. He noted that with all the talk about AI replacing jobs, the jobs that are actually secure are mechanical service jobs, the ones that absolutely require, you guessed it, wrenches. So this wrench art almost feels like the ultimate definitely not AI statement.
Right? It makes you wonder if it's a commentary on job security or if it's just really, really clever design. I mean, it's not exactly comfortable, but the message is certainly there.
And the reversibility of it all, that's what gets me. This isn't just art made from wrenches. It's art that can actually be taken apart, and those wrenches can go back to being tools. That's so rare to have a piece of furniture that remembers it could be something else entirely.
I appreciate the sheer practicality of that. It's like, here's your functional art, and if you have a plumbing emergency, you're covered.
Exactly. It's got this underlying poetry to it, doesn't it? Furniture that can be transformed back into its components, ready to serve another purpose. It was sold through Copenhagen Gallery Adorno, which makes perfect sense for that kind of thoughtful, almost defiant design.
And speaking of turning waste into something unexpected, imagine walking into a room and seeing what looks like tree stumps, but they're actually compressed rolls of pleating paper from Issey Miyake's fashion production.
Right. This is the Paper Log Project. It's Izzy Miyake and Ensemble Studio, and they're taking the industrial waste from Miyake's fashion line, specifically that pleating paper he's so known for, and turning it into furniture or sculptural pieces. They even call them sustainably preserved memories.
And the curator really appreciated how this project shows that not everything has to be about AI. Sometimes it's just about using what's already there, like industrial waste from fast fashion, as a way to create something entirely new. It feels sustainable, but it doesn't shout about it, which I like.
Absolutely. It's a quiet act of transformation, and it ties back so well to what we've been discussing, this stubborn insistence on process, on taking something that would otherwise just be discarded and giving it a new life through incredibly deliberate work.
Yeah, they're almost like fossils of the fashion industry, aren't they? These compressed paper logs holding the memory of fabric that was used to create designs. But does it, you know, actually solve anything? Or does it just make us feel a bit better about all the consumption that created the waste in the first place? That's the tension, isn't it? It might not stop the waste stream entirely,
but it certainly makes us look at it differently. It asks us to see potential where we only saw trash. It's a powerful statement, an artistic one, even if it's just one part of a much larger conversation about waste. Okay, so we've been talking about all these artists choosing the hard way.
What strikes me about all these pieces we've looked at today, from Kosaka's intricate paper cameras to Hasegawa's wrench chairs, they're not striving for efficiency, are they? They're trying to be, I don't know, honest?
That's exactly it. That choice of difficulty, that stubborn insistence on process, it feels like its own form of resistance in 2024. It's not a loud protest, but a quiet, firm declaration that some things are worth doing slowly by hand, even when there's an easier way, especially then.
And if these kinds of stories matter to you, if they make you think differently about how we create and why, you absolutely have to subscribe to the Intersect newsletter.
Jurgen has this incredible knack for finding these pieces every week that make you consider the true meeting point of art and technology. You can find it and subscribe at theintersect.art.
Until next time, keep making things the hard way, if that's what feels right.